Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, a product of the Health Policy Research Consortium, a CTIS program, your weekly podcast empowering communities to use policy as a vehicle to improve their health and learn how to mobilize your community to create positive change where you live, work, and worship. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast.
Welcome to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell. Our guest for today's episode is Michael J. Wilson, the director of Maryland Hunger Solutions, and he is also the chair of the Maryland Food Access and Nutrition Network. Mike is going to talk about public policy and how it impacts our food supply in Maryland and the Mid-Atlantic region, which consists of Maryland, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patricia. Glad to be here.
First, let's begin by defining public policy for our listeners.
So, in my mind, public policy are things that we do that impact the broader public. So, public policy can be something clear and simple like raising the minimum wage or providing health care. All of those things are public policy. In addition, though, things that we do that aren't necessarily legislative can also be public policy. For example, if an elected official who's a governor or a president decides to take an executive action which impacts people directly, that's also public policy. And finally, there are things that have to do with public policy that aren't necessarily done by elected officials. So if a community organization like they had in D.C. a couple weeks ago does a march because they're concerned about the food deserts in the district, that impacts public policy. So all of these things that we do which impact not just ourselves, not just our families, but that impact the broader public are really our public policy.
Okay, now you said something about food deserts, so we just want to make sure our listeners know exactly what a food desert is. Explain it to us.
Yeah, so a food desert is an area where you don't have readily available access to a variety of nutritious food. And that may be because there are no full grocery stores in your community. There may be because there are transportation issues which make it harder and more challenging for folks to get to the local store. Food deserts are a problem because it makes it harder for you to be able to access healthy food. And we describe them as deserts. There's a technical definition that the USDA does, and I'm not going to go through all the details of that now, but if you can't easily get to a place to be able to buy a variety of foods, that may indicate that you live in a food desert.
So let's talk about Maryland Hunger Solutions, and let's talk about the role that your organization plays when it comes to public policy and the effect on our food supply.
So Maryland Hunger Solutions was actually founded 10 years ago. Our goal was to try to eliminate hunger in the state of Maryland, and we do that by utilizing the existing federal nutrition program. So it includes things like food stamps, where we are an outreach partner of the State Department of Human Services. We not only sign people up for food stamps, whether you're on the Eastern Shore or Baltimore or in the D.C. suburbs or Western Maryland, we also train nonprofit groups to sign people up for food stamps. So you could be a local church pantry, you could be a community group, you could be a variety of, you know, the YMCA. We could do a variety of groups. We want to be able to, we know to end hunger, we can't do it just by ourselves. In addition, we work with the WIC program for women, infants, and children, and we work with the school meal program. So it's school breakfast, school lunch, after-school meals, summer meals, all of the school meal program. So people think about school meals in a variety of ways, which you have to understand is with 800,000 public school students in Maryland, Maryland schools serve a million meals every school day to kids, breakfast, lunch, after-school meals. That's a lot of meals. And so the challenge is for kids who are experiencing poverty, how do they access those meals? And it's also how do we make sure that those meals are as nutritious and as healthy as they can be? So we utilize all of those programs, and we do that with outreach, we do that with partnership, and we do that through advocacy, i.e. public policy, to make sure that we can have as much reach as possible, and so that everyone who's eligible participates in these public programs to reduce food insecurity and promote health.
And when you say food insecurity, what do you mean by that?
So food insecurity is the technical term we use rather than hunger. So hunger is something any of us may face at any time. You know, it could be the hunger you face between breakfast and lunch or between lunch and dinner. Food insecurity really refers to the fact that you may not know reliably where your next meal is coming from. So that would make you food insecure.
Amazing. You just provided some really startling numbers in terms of how many children are relying on our food programs that are in our schools. You said a million meals daily.
In Maryland, a million meals every school day. So that doesn't mean that every kid is getting a free meal or a reduced meal, but we're providing a million meals from between Montgomery County and Somerset County and Allegheny County and Baltimore City and Baltimore County and Prince George's County, all over the state. It all totals up to a million meals a day. And those are meals being served in cafeterias all across the school, all across the state.
Amazing. So when we talk about hunger today, we are talking about people who are not certain about where their next meal will come from. And we do have that type of hunger problem in Maryland, and it goes farther and well beyond our homeless population. First, tell us, how bad is hunger in Maryland? Then I want you to tell us who are most affected and why that is the case.
Right. So I will tell you, for Maryland, hunger is a good news, bad news story. The bad news is we still have hunger. About one in seven households in Maryland is food insecure and isn't clear about where the next meal is coming from. But we've made great progress. We've made great progress over the last few years through a variety of methods, both in public policy and in community outreach. So we've had some progress. You have to consider Maryland is the wealthiest state in the country by per capita income. But still, we have tremendous food insecurity all across our state. So when you ask who are the folks who are, you know, facing this food insecurity, that's also a wide variety of folks. So clearly there are seniors who are facing food insecurity because they no longer have a strong income, because they're not working, because they're depending on insufficient retirement accounts and or Social Security. And so we have, you know, tens of thousands of seniors who are experiencing food insecurity. We have families who are facing food insecurity. So it may be an unmarried mom with three or four kids who's trying to figure out how do I work and pay for daycare and pay for the meals. And that's a challenge that families experience. We also have folks who are out of work for a short period of time or for a long period of time who find themselves dealing with financial crises. And this is one of the ways that the food stamp program works the way it's supposed to, which is that when the unemployment rate is higher, the usage of the food stamp program is higher. And so as unemployment begins to reduce, as it has somewhat in the last year, we have fewer people using food stamps in Maryland than we did during the height of the Great Recession. During the height of the Great Recession, it was almost 800,000 people in Maryland utilizing the food stamp program. Today, it is about 660,000. So we've had a reduction, partly because of the economy, partly because of other reasons related to public policy, which we can discuss. But that reduction is something that we notice and we know is true.
And we still have the homeless population. Is that something you want to talk about now as well?
So, yeah, the homeless population is a different challenge, because even if you are, when you are experiencing homelessness, then the challenge for you is how you can get access to the food stamp program and how you can get access to food if you don't have a refrigerator, if you don't have a way to cook food, if you're dependent on living in temporary housing or living with other folks, you have a real challenge in terms of food. So the homeless population really does have a challenge, not just with homelessness, but inevitably also with food. And so, you know, the challenges that they experience are real and dramatic.
And does your organization have any affiliations with any of the shelters, or is that totally separate?
So we don't work directly with the shelters. Many of them who we've worked with in the past are signing people up for food stamps. And many of them provide people with short-term food, whether it's through a pantry or through a meal program where they're serving people. But the challenge is how do we provide long-term solutions when people are in short-term crisis, and that's a challenge we have not as a society really, really dealt with, and that's one of the things that we're still trying to help with. We know that one of the challenges people have is when you're experiencing poverty and or homelessness, is it's the stigma that they have to face, whether you're a kid at school or whether you're a person trying to get a job and you don't have a regular address that they can reach you. So providing people with food so they can have fuel for their brains and for their bodies just to continue to move forward in these crises is something that we're committed to doing as much as possible through a mainstream system like the food stamp program, so that somebody can go to a store and swipe their card just like anybody who's using a Visa or a Discover card, and they can see that they can get food and they can take care of themselves.
Okay. So how do our federal, state, and local governments influence food policy? You know, first start with the federal, then tell us how the state and then the local governments influence food policy.
Right. So we could spend a few days talking about this. So I'll try to simplify it. Just give us a just kind of skim it at the top. So the federal government has the broadest reach and the broadest capacity to deal with this issue. We're not happy that they're not doing more, but just to be clear, it's the federal government that supports the food stamp program. It's the federal government that subsidizes school meals for kids. It's the federal government that provides the funding for the Women's, Infants, and Children's program. Those sets of programs provide millions of Americans, not just folks in Maryland, but millions of Americans with the food that they need to make it from day to day, because in all honesty, food ought to be a right, because if you don't have food, you can't live, you can't survive. There's no right to life without food. And so the programs that exist are there, and those are the things that are very important that the federal government supports.
And the state level?
So the most important thing the state can do is to make sure that we're fully accessing all of the federal programs. That's the most important thing the state can do, to make sure that we're doing the outreach, to make sure that we're reaching folks who are eligible for food stamps, that schools are doing what they can to access school meals. Above and beyond that, there are other things the state can do. So, for example, Maryland, through some advocacy that we did in public policy, did an increase for the minimum benefit. Many of your listeners may know that the minimum food stamp benefit around this country is $15 a month. I said 15, 1-5.
You said 15 or 50?
Hundreds of thousands of folks who get 15. In Maryland, there are about 30,000 people who get $15 a month. And I don't want to talk about what you can get for $15 a month, because I think we all know how limited that is. We did advocacy to try to raise that, and Maryland's General Assembly raised it so that if you're 62 and over, you'll get at least $30. And so the state puts in those additional dollars. $30 doesn't make people wealthy by any means, but it's a great investment in the health and the nutrition of those folks. We thought they ought to raise it for everyone. They decided to do it for those who are 62 and over. We decided that was half a loaf and that was better than nothing, and that we will continue to try to advocate for that. But the $30 a month is an example of how you add state dollars to federal dollars to help local folks.
That is amazing. Truly amazing. You said 15 and not 50.
I said 15. That's correct. 1-5. There are about 30,000 folks in Maryland who get $15 a month, and I'm sure that there are more than that in Pennsylvania and in West Virginia and in New Jersey and in Virginia. D.C., like us, has done a raise. D.C. was fortunate enough to be able to raise it for everyone who's getting the minimum, so that no one in the District of Columbia gets less than $30 a month, which, when you think about it, is such a great investment. Those dollars get spent in local stores, at local farmers markets. It's a help for their economy, and it also helps provide additional nutrition and protects the health care of all of those low-income folks.
And how do they go about determining that amount?
So it's based on what's known as the low-cost meal plan that USDA has devised, and they do an apportionment calculation based on how you can get to that plan. And then everyone's food stamp benefit, of course, is determined by their own income, expenses, and household size. So most of the folks who are getting the minimum are usually one-person households, sometimes two-person households, because if you're a single mom with two or three kids, depending on your income and your expenses, you're more likely to get a larger benefit. But even those who are getting the lesser benefit, even if you're a one- or two-person household, you know, getting that very minimal benefit is a real challenge. And so we want to do everything we can to help those folks, you know, do as best they can in very, very difficult circumstances.
Amazing. And did we talk about the local government's influence already in this discussion?
We have not.
Okay,
so
let's go ahead.
There's a lot of really good things going on in some local areas. Baltimore City has something called Food Pack, where they've been working very diligently to figure out ways to try to deal with their food desert issue. Prince George's County has the Prince George's County Food Equity Council, which has done a lot of local organizing focused on, you know, health and nutrition and the food deserts that they deal with there. Montgomery County, Maryland, for example, has done a really innovative thing. They've put together what they call a food security plan. They're going to try to eliminate hunger in the county over a number of years, and they're going to do it by measuring food insecurity on a year-by-year basis. They're looking at what the schools do. They're looking at what their nonprofit pantries provide, what they're doing in terms of signing people up for the federal nutrition programs like WIC and food stamps. They're taking a really aggressive omnibus approach to try to end it in their county, knowing that, as many of us have told them, when you're right next to the District of Columbia, when you're right next to Prince George's County, there are things that are beyond your control. When you're a part of the state of Maryland, what the state does has an impact, and most importantly, what the federal government does has an impact. But I want to salute Montgomery County for trying hard to try to figure out how to be thoughtful about addressing this issue at the local level.
Well, let's talk about the private sector. When you think about our local grocery stores, local farmers, and just to name a few, how do they influence food policy?
So, you know, we all know that grocery stores are in business to make money. And so the challenge for them is how do they make money in ways that also serve the public good? You know, they have food stamp customers as customers, and that's a way they participate in the public program. They have to be able to serve a broader public and yet even serve not just a geographic part of the population, but a broader part of the population. Because the stores don't want people going hungry when they have food on their shelves. They're trying to figure out how do we provide access to our products and services at a price that really makes sense. And so that's a continual struggle that many stores deal with. And if I could just mention one of the more innovative models going on in Baltimore, something called Baltimarket, where the local health department in Baltimore City is working with senior high-rises to have seniors be able to do online ordering and having the food delivered to the senior high-rise with the help of local community leaders, and it makes it much easier for those seniors to be able to get food and have access to food. And they also use public benefits for that when that's appropriate. I want to talk about farmers for a second because you raised this. Maryland has had a tremendous growth in farmers markets, and that's a good thing because what happens is that local farmers connect directly to local consumers. You're usually talking to the person who's grown the tomatoes or who raised the chickens that lay the eggs. So all of that is a good thing. There's a program in Maryland called Maryland Money, run by the Maryland Farmers Market Association, which gives bonuses for folks who are using public benefits. So if you take your food stamps or your WIC dollars to the local farmers market and spend $5, you can get an additional $5. So that's great for the farmers who get more customers and more access to their program, but it's also great to low-income consumers who get access to local fresh food right there in their community from local farmers. I'll talk about this later, but we're trying to get the state of Maryland to invest in this program as well to make it even a bigger success.
That's awesome. Yeah, we want to talk about some of the things that we can do later about, you know, what we can do on the individual level or collectively and as a community to influence public policy. But before we do that, what changes in food policy can we expect from this current administration? Will they help or hinder?
I wish I could say they were going to help. I have not seen helpful suggestions. In the president's budget, there were clearly some harmful proposals. They wanted to do things like eliminate the minimum benefit. So we talked about how it's $15 a month. They wanted to eliminate the minimum so that people could get less, which many of us think doesn't make sense. $15 a month doesn't do very much. But if you're going to provide people with even less than that, that's not helpful.
Let me interrupt right there just to ask a question. You mentioned earlier that food should be a right.
Yes.
Do you think they, and I agree, and I would think most people would agree with that, but what are your thoughts when it comes to why the administration would seek to do that? Do you think they believe that food is a privilege?
So I think they had a number of proposals in their budget plan, which they suspected were not going to get enacted, which were negotiating tactics with the Congress. But the message that they send is to undermine the existing food system. We could provide, through a variety of economic incentives, food for every hungry person in this country if we chose to do so. When we decide that we're going to have a war in another country, we don't ask how much it costs. We go ahead and we do that. We decided to have a war on hunger in this country. Even when we try to decide how much it would cost, we could successfully win that effort through a variety of methods. The existing programs and other anti-poverty programs would be a way to do that. But I don't think that's on the agenda of the existing administration, and frankly, it's been a stretch for many administrations.
Do you foresee any positive changes in food policy?
So we believe that, and what we say in Maryland Hunger Solutions, as well as with many of our partners from around the country, is that we need to defend and protect the existing program because it does so much good for so many people. I'd like to think we could do more positive, better things, and I have a lot of ideas about things that could happen and that should happen. But honestly, if we were able to maintain the status quo in the face of an onslaught of attacks, that would be a victory.
And give me an example of one of the ideas that you have.
So we think the minimum benefit should be increased. And we think that should happen nationally, not on a state-by-state basis. If we increase the minimum benefit, it's the same as if you increase the minimum wage. The folks at the bottom get a little bit of a boost, and that helps the general economy, and it helps them. So that's one of the things I think is really easy for folks to understand. If we raise the minimum benefit so that nobody got less than $30, that would make a significant investment in the health and the nutrition of low-income folks.
Well, I really hope...
Primarily, those folks would be seniors.
Yes, and I really hope that Maryland Hunger Solutions and all of your affiliates can sell that concept because it's definitely needed. So why don't we, is there anything else you want to share in terms of any food policy changes?
There's a bill called H.R. 1276 by Representative out of North Carolina, Alma Adams, that incorporates a number of positive proposals moving forward. So H.R. 1276 is a bill which I suspect will not get passed. But at the time when we're having a conversation about the Farm Bill, which will be reauthorized next year, it's important to have positive proposals out there, like the one I discussed about raising the minimum benefit.
Okay.
And H.R. 1276 incorporates many of them.
Okay. And so let's talk about what we can do as an individual or collectively in our communities to influence public policy. Tell us what we can do.
So the most important thing we can ever do when we have an opportunity is to vote. And next Tuesday is Election Day in Virginia and in New Jersey, where they're going to elect governors and they're going to elect state legislators. And as much as we've talked about how the state of Maryland has been able to do some things, I am hopeful that there is a positive change in both Virginia and in New Jersey to help encourage other partners in our region to be able to address hunger in a broad, thoughtful, progressive way. So people need to make sure that they vote for governor and for state legislators in order to have a positive impact there. Now, that's not true all around the country, obviously, but because there's not an election the next Tuesday all around the country. But we cannot miss an election. Every election is important, and the last election demonstrated just how important every election is and how much every vote matters. We've got to do better in participating. And if I could say one thing about Virginia, Virginia always has a big drop-off the year after the presidential election. So I'm hopeful that there'll be a bigger turnout in November of 2017. If we had turnout in Virginia in 2017, like we had in 2016, Virginia would have a much better result because it would be much more representative of the folks who are voting.
Okay, and so let me ask this important question as well. How would they know who to vote for in terms of, you know, the right person? How would they know?
Right, so all of us have to figure out how to vote for a candidate. And you can't listen to just what candidates say or what their commercials say, because that's not a way to educate yourself. I think you have to look at and listen to their platforms broadly. I think you have to ask questions. I think you have to depend on organizations who you think are representative of the things that are important to you, whether it's Virginia Hunger Solutions or the New Jersey Anti-Hunger Coalition or Maryland Hunger Solutions or other organizations that, while they don't work necessarily all the time in this anti-hunger sphere, are allied with us, whether it's the NAACP or the League of Women Voters or other organizations. So we have to do the best we can to educate ourselves, and we can't know everything, so we should try to reach out to and understand the organizations that are, you know, representing the things that are important to us.
Great. So tell us what else we can do. Like we were talking about grocery stores, something that just came to my mind is that, can we do anything to impact the type of grocery stores that come into our communities, like maybe lower cost grocery stores?
So here are a couple things. I would give people very specific things to think about. The grocery stores are very good at recognizing what their consumers want. And when you buy something at a grocery store, they know what they're sold, and that's what they're going to stock. So if you buy more vegetables, they'll stock more vegetables. If you buy more high-quality things, that's what they'll stock. If you're buying Coca-Cola and potato chips and, you know, honey buns, that's what they're going to stock. So every time you make a purchase, you vote for what you want your grocery store to have. So keep that in mind. I'm not saying no one should ever not have anything that's sweet or salty. I don't think that's likely. But if you will try to increase your purchase of healthy food, your stores are gonna respond and stock more of that. The second thing I would add is, so we've got a bill in Maryland that we're going to be pressing in the state legislature next year It's called the Maryland Cures for Kids Act, and it's really simple to understand. Most folks know that there are kids who get free meals, there are kids who get reduced price meals, and there are kids who pay for their meals because their families can afford to pay for them. The kids who are in the reduced price category are the ones who are most likely to not eat because the free kids get free meals, and the kids who pay for their meals pay for theirs. And they're also the kids who are most likely to run up school meal debts and have to suffer having to get what we often refer to as the shame sandwich, which through no fault of their own, somebody didn't pay their bill. So we're trying to get Maryland to pick up the cost of reduced price meals all across the state so that those kids don't have to worry about that issue. It's an investment of about $6 million, which is not very much in a budget that's multi-billions of dollars in Maryland. So we're trying to get the state to pick up that cost, and that bill is going to be introduced in the state house and in the state senate, and we're going to press forward for it because we think that's the right thing. But in every state, there are kids right now who are in the reduced price category who are probably just above the poverty level, and they're having challenges just accessing school meals. This is a really simple and discreet and very direct proposal. Let's have the state pick up the cost of reduced price kids.
Amazing. And when you think about our children and our seniors who are just struggling daily just to get a meal, it's very, very disheartening. And there's more that needs to be done to help them out. All right. Is there anything you want to say to wrap up before we close the podcast?
Well, I'm encouraged that we're having this conversation. I think that there's always more that all of us can learn and that all of us can share. There is progress that we can make, not just for our own families. I know the holidays are going to come up, and people are going to think about things that they can do for folks who are experiencing poverty. I would tell you that after the 1st of January, those families are going to have the same challenges. And so the question is, what can we do that is sustainable over time, as opposed to providing a meal here and a meal there? What can we do to have a sustainable change that really addresses the core issues of poverty and hunger? And those are the things that we need to do. So for us, it's about addressing the reduced price costs. It's about making sure that folks who are coming out of incarceration, who already have a hard time getting a good job, also have access to the food stamp program so that they aren't struggling with all the other issues and food too. It's making sure that seniors at the twilight of their lives don't have to worry about, do I have food or do I have medicine? There are lots of things we can all do, and let's do as much as we can in as efficient a way as possible.
And one more thing before we close. I know a lot of people are gardening at home, those who have either a yard or a deck or some area that's small where they can grow a garden. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so people in Maryland have a shorter growing season than people who are farther south, but people should always feel free to grow their own food. In fact, one of the things that's not well known about the food stamp program is you can actually use your food stamps to buy seeds.
Great idea.
You can use your food stamps to buy seeds, and that's another thing you can do to help grow your own food. I'm not saying everybody can grow all the things that they want. I don't think you were insinuating that they could. But everything we can do to help make ourselves more food secure is something that we should all try to deal with if we can.
Great, great advice. We've been speaking with Michael J. Wilson, Director of Maryland Hunger Solutions. We've been talking about public policy and how it affects our food supply, our health, and how we can influence policy to ensure that fresh produce is accessible in our communities. Michael, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast. Remember, you have the power to use policy to improve your picture of health where you live, work, and worship. For more information on the Health Policy Research Consortium podcast, visit our website at www.hprc.info and like us on our social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr.
The research and information that we report during this show was supported by the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities of the National Institutes of Health under award number 5U54MD008-60802. The content is solely the responsibility of the authors and does not necessarily represent the official views of the National Institutes of Health.